We begin with education. He's been busy. And the superintendent of IPS, Dr. Louis Farabee, is beginning a bunch of listening sessions, town hall meetings, and work sessions. First work session is tomorrow. Tomorrow afternoon from 1 to 2:25 out on the Far East Side. Yeah, Far East Siders, he's coming to you at Cafe 38th and Post Road. And then this Saturday from 2 to 3:25 at the Julia Carson Government Center, Fall Creek and Delaware, and a number of other places. He's been busy. He only got here in October. He's learned how to go down to the legislature and get stuff from the legislature. You know, before superintendents would go to the legislature, they'd beat up on him and throw him down the steps. But not Dr. Farabee. Dr. Louis Farabee, the superintendent of IPS, is in the house. How you doing?
I'm well, and you, sir?
I'm just fine. This is the listening tour. You talked about it as part of your 90 days. The 90 days is about to run out the end of February. What is this set of listening tours? What do you want to hear? Who do you want to come out?
Everyone. Mm-hmm. So first, I want to begin by thanking all of our partners who made it possible for us to host these events all throughout our community. But as you indicated earlier, this is an opportunity for me to continue my listening. I want to listen very deeply, very broadly to our constituents. I started with meeting with individuals. My first week on the job, had an opportunity to go into schools and listen directly to the voices of our students. And now I want to hear the voices of our entire community. And these sessions are a great opportunity for me to do so.
And the sessions are literally all are around the district. As I said, tomorrow afternoon from 1 to 2:25 out of Cafe, 38th and Post Road. Then Saturday afternoon from 2 to 3:25 at the Julia Carson Government Center, Fall Creek and Delaware in the middle part of the city. Then on Tuesday down to the southeast side at the Southeast Community Center, the Senior Citizen Center at 901 Shelby from 6 to 7:25. Then on this coming Wednesday, the 5th in the afternoon down at the University of Indianapolis at the Schweitzer Center from 1 to 2:25. Then this coming Thursday, February the 6th from 7 to 8:25 up at Easter Seals Crossroads at 4740 Kingsway Drive. That's basically 47th and Keystone on the north side. And then next Friday, February the 7th, out at a church. You're going to community centers and going to church at New Wineskin Ministries at 4501 West, 38th Street. That's 38th and Lafayette Road on the south side of the street. And what do you hope to learn?
I want to hear from our stakeholders on what we're doing well, mm-hmm. Opportunities for improvement. What do they see as impediments or barriers to our success? And again, just really good ideas. You know, I believe that the best ideas will come from the people that we serve, and they know our service the best. And so what better way to think about setting a strategic course and identifying priorities without talking to the people who you serve?
So now while you're out, while you have been listening to folks within the system with students and teachers and bus drivers and custodians and cafeteria workers and folks in the community, the business community, what have you, now going on this listening tour, while you're doing that, your teachers are still educating kids. It's getting ready to be February. After February is March, which is testing month. I read for the third graders, a whole, what is it, NEAP and all this other kind of stuff, and then not to mention I-STEP. What's being done to make sure your kids, your babies, as you call them, and they're not, you know what I mean, right, are ready for March testing month?
And so what I did very early on is set targets for academic achievement for all of our schools. And we are supporting those schools with those targets. We've identified also priority schools that have been struggling historically with student achievement, and we haven't seen gains in their assessment results. And so we're providing intensive support for those schools. But while I'm listening, we still have core leadership members on the ground supporting our schools on a daily basis, not only with just student achievement, but also graduation. We have Project Graduation, which is an initiative to ensure that we get all of our students prepared for graduation. The intent is to increase our graduation rate or at the same time decreasing the number of students that graduate with waivers?
You may have a question for the superintendent of IPS, Dr. Lewis Farabee, 239-1310, 239-1310, or send me a text message at 37890, keyword Amos, 37890, keyword Amos. And the lawyers have to mention that your regular text message rates on your phone will apply. One of the other things that maybe caught some people, superintendent, by surprise was a couple of bills in the legislature. One of them is House Bill 1321 that, in essence, says that IPS would like permission to work with charter school operators to house those schools in extra or empty space in an IPS building. IPS would have some control over the things that charter school teaches. And in return, and you're paying the light bill and the phone bill and what have you, the achievement of those students would be counted in IPS's achievement. And there's some people that are saying, wait a minute, IPS and charters were fighting like Coke and Pepsi. They were fighting like the Broncos and the Seahawks. Now, all of a sudden, there's kumbaya. What's going on?
I don't believe we have to have an environment of animosity between traditional public schools and charters. The way I see it, we serve the same community, we serve the same students, and we're vying for the same resources. Together, in partnership, I believe we can better serve our community. Doesn't have to be a rocky relationship. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that way in several urban cities, and for the most part, been the past in Indianapolis. But going forward, I believe our future and opportunities to dramatically change student outcomes is going to require partnership and collaboration from both parties.
I know the original bill did not allow for collective bargaining between your teachers and the system. They've taken, my understanding is they've taken that part out of the bill. The bill has passed by a wide bipartisan margin in the House and now moves to the Senate. In terms of practicality, how practically would this work? Is this something where I know you have one charter school now in Lacer and Lacey, which is out at Lacey Academy, which is out on the west side of the city. How would this work? And could a non quote unquote corporate charter school organizer, say a small, you know, grassroots group that put together an educational plan that was sound, approach IPS to say, hey, would you be willing to work with us? And then they go get a charter and then you guys do business.
And so what the legislation described is an educational provider. And mm-hmm. So I don't see that exclusive to charters.
Okay.
We're definitely open to grassroots organizations that have a model that we believe will better serve our students. You know, it's really, at the end of the day, developing opportunities to better serve our students and get better outcomes. Mm-hmm. And it also provides an opportunity to replicate some of the best practices we've seen in our schools, some of the best practices we can possibly steal from our charters or other educational providers. So this just gives us another tool in the toolbox. And we believe the more tools we have in the toolbox, the better we're able to serve our students.
Before you took the job, the school board authorized, I believe, up to three schools that had demonstrated academic achievement. Could you kind of get freed up from some of the rules? Has that been implemented, and how is that working?
So the first school board meeting I had in the district, we approved the Innovation Network, mm-hmm. where we have three schools that have more autonomy. With that enhanced autonomy, they have more control of their instructional program, more control over their curriculum. But this particular bill would give even more flexibility. Hmm. And I am looking to expand this network because I believe in many cases the principals and the teachers and the community at that level have a better understanding of the local context. And in many cases, if they're proving that they can get positive results for students, should have that autonomy.
The existing charter school law in this state still allows the Indianapolis Public Schools to issue charters for charter schools. Have you and the board started to have discussions over whether that is something you all want to do?
Yeah, so we've had conversations about this idea of collaboration, mm-hmm. and we all see it as an opportunity to bring additional resources to our district, to our city, and our community, and provide greater educational success in the urban area in our district. And so because we're sharing resources and services, it also provides us an opportunity to be more efficient. Also provides us an opportunity to better utilize our facilities. And when we do that, I believe not only do our students benefit, but our taxpayers benefit as well.
One of the things, as you've gone around and talked to folks, particularly parents.
I'm glad you mentioned parents.
Yeah. What are you hearing from parents? And I bring that up in some of the things over the years that parents have raised concerns, not just about IPS, but I think this is school systems in general, is the disconnect between the educator. We're the educator. We know better. Don't, you know, sit down and we'll take care of this, and kind of a dismissive attitude sometimes against parents. You know, have you gotten that kind of feedback? And if so, how are you getting the IPS family to understand we're all in this together and treat parents as partners, not as adversaries?
And so you're spot on. The true way to ensure that we address the needs of our students is to talk with parents and find out what those needs are. Sure, we have educational experts in the classroom, but we also must understand the students that we're responsible for educating. And much of that information, we believe, will come from our parents, grandparents and other family members in the home or guardians, but also it provides an opportunity for parents and guardians to have an understanding of what's happening in the classroom and be able to support that at home outside of the school day. You know, I met with students, but this is really the first big opportunity to get widespread parent perspectives from the town halls and the work session and also our stakeholder survey. But I want to hear from parents what's happening in the classroom. So I've talked to students, but I want to hear from parents specifically. What's happening in your child's classroom, and what do you see as opportunities for us?
One of the things I've not heard you address is the atmosphere in a school. There's over the years we've had a conversation, and Chris has heard callers, the perception that classrooms are unruly, discipline doesn't exist, teachers can't control the kids run the classroom, the halls are noisy, students, you know, tell teachers that everything but a child, call them everything but a child of God. Where, as you have gone, and you're superintendent, so you're kind of a tall guy, so you just cannot disguise yourself from being 6 foot down to 5 foot four and sneak into a school. What sense have you gotten about building control, discipline and order, chaos versus community in your buildings?
You know, I've had opportunity to visit at least a third of our schools. Mm-hmm. What I've seen is completely the opposite. So when I hear that, it's very disheartening because
This is Pat. This is not necessarily right. What may be happening on now. Somebody may call and tell you what's happening on the ground. But this is perceptions. And I think a lot of turning any organization around is dealing with something that may have happened a year ago, 5 years ago, 20 years ago.
Right. So I would say 90% of the students that I've encountered want to be at school and are ready and willing to learn. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's probably characteristic of every school district across the nation, that most of the students come ready and are prepared to learn. You know, we have some amazing students in our building who exhibit great character, who are responsible and respectful. And so I don't want that to be, you know, anything other than that to be the image of our students, because that's what I've experienced. From our elementary schools to our middle schools to our high schools, are the young people perfect? No. Mm-hmm. You know, but were you perfect? Were I perfect? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. But I would say the majority of our students are respectful and responsible and are willing to learn. And that's what I ask of our students. Come every day ready and willing to learn, and then let the adults do their work.
They're having this fight in the legislature over Common Core. It looks like Indiana is not going to adhere to Common Core. We're going to write our own standards, maybe some from the Common Core page, some from some other page. And I know one of your superintendent colleagues, Dr. Dina Cushenberry, out at Warren Township, testified in front of the legislature concerned that since they're trying to mesh the SAT and the ACT tests to Common Core, that could hurt her students. Are you concerned about that? Is that your first priority? Let's deal with the basics first.
Yeah, so she is definitely raising the flag on Common Core. I have experience coming from a state in North Carolina where we had implementation of Common Core.
And that's trending. That's a conservative state. And there hasn't been that kind of pushback against Common Core as the state became more conservative.
So what happened in North Carolina is interesting. We were moving ahead with full force with implementation of Common Core, but what we discovered is we lack really a lot of the resources and professional development for our educators to do it at a high level with strong fidelity of implementation. So wherever we land, I just want to be certain that the resources are there to ensure that we're able to not only raise the bar for the students, but raise the bar for our educators and give them the resources to address whatever new curriculum that we adopt. We can adopt standards, but fidelity of implementation will be the telltale in terms of student outcomes.
239-1310, 239-1310 with Dr. Louis Farabee, the superintendent of IPS. Okay, so now you're in North Carolina where it gets cold every now and then. And see, now you're up here in the polar vortex, decided to come. Walk listeners through what goes into a decision for a two-hour delay and for closing a school. The reason I say that, you know, in the past, we were joking about it before we went on the air, IPS would be reluctant to close a school and reluctant to do a two-hour delay. What goes into making that decision? Is it ultimately your staff's call? Do they call you up or get on a conference call and say, this is what we think. Now, Dr. Farabee, you the superintendent, what are we going to do?
It's actually a very collaborative decision. It's one that's well thought out, very calculated. The first thing that we consider is safety. So safety is paramount. Can we get students to school safely? Can families maneuver through the roads to get students to school safely? Can staff members get to school safely? And so we're constantly assessing road conditions. We also consider weather and temperatures. So we're thinking about students that have to be at the bus stop, students that are walking to school. And we're also thinking about, are the sidewalks and the bus stop areas clear where students can maneuver safely? And so that's where we start. But we also consider, you know, how soon do we need to notify families? You know, what's actually happening with the weather forecast? Is it projected to change? When is the weather storm or a situation going to impact? And so there's so many factors. And we also consider, if we need to close the delay, how will families be cared for? How will families get food? And so we work with other agencies to ensure that, you know, those things are in place so families can be taken well care of.
I think the day, not the week right after the Christmas holiday, but just a couple of weeks ago when you guys went to the two-hour delay, I think it was on a Wednesday, and everybody decided to get out there and drive, and the roads were not the greatest in the world, and I got caught coming down Dr. Martin Luther King in the buses dropping kids off at Attucks traffic jam. And I'm looking at my watch, it's like 9-something, and I'm going, okay, those buses, they're already 2 hours late. They're late getting the kids to Attucks, and those buses now have to double back and pick up the elementary schools. You just don't have a group of buses do high school kids, that's all they do. Is that also a problem where you call a two-hour delay, and if the streets are jammed up and there are these traffic jams, kids could be even further delayed getting to school? Maybe not the first batch, which is the high school, but when it moves down to the elementary.
Yeah, so that's something we consider, traffic. We also consider just the buses itself. So a lot of people don't realize
You got them diesel buses.
Yeah, so we actually send buses out to see if, one, they can maneuver roads, but two, can they operate? And so a lot of our buses, when the temperature gets below zero, the air pressure freezes, and we're not able to operate the brakes properly. Ooh. And then also, in many cases, we go out and buses aren't able to start. And then when you start them and start to maneuver around, you know, we have difficulty getting the bus to run for an extended period of time.
And so the safety is not just the safety of the students. It is, can that driver maneuver that big bus safely and not hit cars on the side of the road or anything like that?
Exactly. I mean, but, you know, and that's a tough job. You know, I think a lot of people don't realize, you know, the ratio for a bus driver is about 60 to 1. And they're wheeling that big vehicle around, and we want to make sure that they can do it safely. And to get to every stop in a safe way and to get students back to school, I mean, that's something that we consider. And so sometimes a delay allows you to better prepare buses, even though we get them
it
in.
It also takes out a night and puts it into daylight.
Right, exactly. So you get additional daylight. And sometimes the temperature changes. And then we also have to consider staff members, many of which live outside of the city in our, you know, suburbs. And we want to be sure that they can get there. So we get the students there, but we don't have staff members that can get there safely. Then that's another issue.
Do things have to get cut in a classroom or cut out of the learning schedule to adjust to a 2-hour delay? And if you have a lot of 2-hour delays, are we missing learning?
And so we are very mindful of protecting the instructional day. And so that is something that we consider. We're also having conversation now just based on what we experienced this winter on a couple items to be more proactive with the future. So one, can we build in more snow days into our calendar so we have adequate plans for makeup? Two, we're exploring options. Do we make up time by extending our school day for several days to ensure that we get instructional time back that we miss? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're always thinking through how do we protect the instructional day and the time we have with our students.
Now, nobody has thought of extending the day. Now, that's, I don't know, that's more radical than having the snow day. 239 and the decision on the 3 snow days already, not counting the snow day from was it this week? I've lost track of all these of last week. Will be tacked on at the end of the year.
And so you mentioned the additional time, and so one thought, one frame of thinking is perhaps maybe instead of having a makeup day, we would add additional time to our school day for several days to get back that instructional time. Of course, that would have to be approved by Department of Education here in the state. But, you know, we're looking at all options possible. Of course, makeup days are never convenient for everyone because some people have plans, some people have made schedules, you know, around the current calendar. Right. And so as you have to think about makeup days, sometimes that's a challenge.
A question came up yesterday from an IPS employee, a union employee, hourly, I believe, was a custodian. Was that I can't remember what the job title was. And evidently she was told she didn't have a copy of her union agreement, which would govern the rules of the road. But she said she was told by HR that she would have to take a vacation day to be compensated for the snow day. And it didn't dawn on me till this morning saying, wait a minute, if you weren't compensated, first of all, is that the case? So in other words, if somebody is hourly and they didn't work on the snow day, they would not be compensated?
So it depends actually on your status with your collective bargaining.
Okay.
But what I would say is, as a whole, we've made a concerted effort to take care of all our employees. Mm-hmm. So the 2 days that we miss immediately following the winter break that we will not make up, right, we've actually got that waiver approved not to make those 2 days up. We actually passed a resolution with our Board of Education that I recommended that employees who missed time of work during those 2 days would be compensated as if they were at work those 2 days.
Okay.
Days that would be made up, employees will be paid for that time when those days are made up.
So the first 2 days of the bad weather of 2014, those first 2 days right after the Christmas New Year's holiday ended, hourly employees will be compensated
because those are 2 days you do not have to make up with the waiver from the State Department of Education, correct?
Correct. But those students will not be those staff members, I should say, will not be penalized because those days will not be made up. They will be paid for those two days, January 6th and 7th, as if they were at work.
And then if the schools were closed those other days, you get paid, again, depending on whatever your collective bargaining agreement is. So non-union employees, I guess the best way to say it, mm-hmm. hourly employees, they would get paid when they work on the snow day.
Correct.
So they get their money back, kind of sort.
Right. And we wanted to be very strategic to ensure that the school closures was not a negative situation in terms of missing time from work and pay for employees when we were not making up days.
Now, at the same time, you've been dealing with the snow. You've been dealing with trying to turn the academic ship around. A couple things happened. The A through F grades came out. And IPS as a system, first of all, IPS as a system in terms of the individual schools, the number of schools getting Fs went down, number of schools getting As went up. I think the number of Cs went down, got a few more Bs, a couple more Ds. And then the system grade, you miss getting a D by 0.04 of a point. Now, any student that gets an F on a paper but misses the D by 400 points, they're going to run to the teacher and say, "Teacher Farabee, can you recheck my work? Is there any extra credit I can give? Is there any extra credit you can get? Have they rescored the test?"
So we have some recalculations going on, but I'm not going to push for a D. And so, my standards, obviously, is our school district is striving to be an A school corporation. But what I will say to you that I don't want to get lost is we moved from a 0.24 to a 0.96.
You went from a low F to almost out.
But if you look at the increase mm-hmm. in points,
right.
Berry School Corporations in the state of Indiana had that dramatic of an increase in their letter grade. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, somebody may be a B, but they only moved a few points or they stayed stagnant. But that was a significant increase, which reflects the fact that we have truly outgrown, if you look at growth in mm-hmm. the proficiency, we've outgrown the state average in increase in ISTEP and ECA results. And so, I'm not ready to run a victory lap. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a lot more work to be done, but I do want our community to understand that the district has made significant progress and will continue to do so.
The other thing that has started to get notice, and before I get to this basketball team on the east side of the city, let me go to Denise at 239-1310. Hi, Denise.
Hi, Amos. Hi, Dr. Farabee. I just wanted to say to Dr. Farabee, welcome once again. And will you consider going back to the old calendar that we had before this new calendar? For example, the spring break. You have the intersession instead of the spring break where they're off for 2 weeks as opposed to a week.
So that is one of the topics that I've gotten feedback from families from in a number of occasions. So if you haven't completed our stakeholder survey, please do so because I want to hear your perspective on our calendar, among other things.
Okay.
And so what we will do, we will discuss our findings from my listening sessions, from the survey, and we'll learn what's great, what needs to be improved, what needs to be changed. And from those discussions, this will serve as a basis for our planning. And so I want to hear from families on their thoughts on our calendar.
Now, I got to ask you, Superintendent, what is the stakeholder survey? How would parents have gotten it?
And so we launched our stakeholder survey a few days ago, mm-hmm. and we're really excited. We've got close to 3,000 participants already, but they can access the survey from our website.
Mm-hmm.
They can go to the school and complete the survey there. It's on the school website. Also, they can go to our public libraries, which are partners in completing the survey. We also have sent out email invites to several. And, you know, again, it's an opportunity to provide feedback. And again, if you give us your email address, we'll make sure you get it.
Denise, did you get a stakeholder survey?
Well, I did not because I did not submit my email, but I will do that today.
Okay.
So that I can participate in it. And let me say this lastly. I really appreciate you calling off the schools for two-hour delays or just calling them off, period, because the safety of my child is my responsibility, but I really appreciate you taking it into consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Let me go to the phones. And Joanne, hi there.
Good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon.
I had a question. I'm a concerned grandparent. I have a grandson that's in fifth grade at school 99. We've been having a problem. Well, I have. I want to talk with his teacher because his grades, he had some pretty bad grades here the past semester. And also, he had a couple of suspensions, which I know sometimes he have a little attitude problem. But I seem to be having a problem trying to get in touch with the teacher. So whenever she could call or whatever is fine with me. But I would like to talk with her one-on-one to find out if there are some areas where I can help.
That's a great question. Hello, Janine. Great question. I appreciate you making sure that you are involved in your son's, the grandson, you said?
Yes, my grandson.
And it's Joanne, right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much for calling in and expressing the interest in supporting your grandson. We're going to get your information today to make sure that you are able to make contact with your grandson's teacher. But every parent should have an opportunity to contact the school, speak directly with the school principal, and make contact with the teacher. And if you are not able to do so, please contact my office, and we'll make sure that you have those conversations.
Joanne, did you go up to the school and try to talk to the teacher?
I did go to the school on one occasion, and I understand that we can't just walk in.
Right.
So
right.
When I went to the office at the front, I was told that she would, put a note in the teacher's box to let her know that I wanted to get in touch with her. She had done that for my daughter also.
Let me ask this. Either you or your daughter have an email account? Email?
I have one, but they don't have my email.
I'm going to do in a hot second. I'm going to have Chris take your information off the phone. We're going to share that with Superintendent Farabee and his staff. But let me give you a tip. All the teachers and the principals in IPS have email addresses. And they have to, when you call the office or go up to the office, they have to give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can send them an email note.
Okay.
And now I'm being very on anything, even if it's teacher, you did a great job with my kid, just thought you want to know.
Right.
And the superintendent got an email address too.
Okay.
And so you can let him know stuff.
Okay.
And then you got it in writing.
Okay.
See, you're already ahead of the game, girlfriend, because you got the email. So I want you, Joanne, to hold on and give Chris, the person you talked to when you called me, give him your name and a phone number where you can be reached during the day, okay?
Okay, and thank you very much.
Thank
Keep up the good work.
All righty, thank you. As I go to Tina, I got a text message at 37890, keyword Amos. Superintendent, here's a bus attendant. The bus attendant would like to know, why can't we get paid like the drivers when the weather is bad and school is out? Would that be the same thing the attendant would get paid on the makeup day?
Again, everybody's pay is based on the collective bargaining that they're under. No one should be impacted where they would not receive pay if we're closed and we're not making up the day.
So that bus attendant, if they were scheduled to work on January 6th and 7th,
they'll be paid for those two
days. They'll be paid for those 2 days. And that bus attendant should, if they are covered under a union agreement, read the union contract. If not, get a copy of the personnel policy of IPS and see what it says.
But they will also be paid
on the makeup
on
day.
On the makeup day, yes.
Which is coming.
Which is coming.
239-1310. 239-1310. We'll take a break. Superintendent is here. And yeah, we're going to talk about this basketball team on the east side of the city. They're getting on ESPN.
Tech Titans.
Usually on ESPN, they only put Carmel High School on ESPN. They putting Tech on ESPN, and they winning.
Tech Titans.
Don't Don't let them go to the championship. Tech Titans.
Tech Titans.
And they're leading the league.
And great young men. So if we have a chance, I like to tell the story of some of the young men on the team.
We'll do that when we come back and hear about the young, because I know they got to have at least a 2.5 average just to play basketball for IPS. It's After News with Amos after these. Dr. Louis Farabee, the superintendent of IPS, is in the house. Back to the phones. And Tina, hi there.
Hi. Hey, superintendent. I was concerned about, I'm just going to say the school, Fall Creek Academy. My son has had, multiple infractions at that school. I really would like to speak with you in regards to the situations that occurred. I don't know if I can leave my info offline or
Is this a problem in the classroom? Is this a behavior? What kind of problem, in a nutshell?
It's basically, it's in the classroom. And here recently, we took him out of the school. And I just recently heard that the individual that he has a problem with has recently been fired. But I just want to make sure that, just none of this happens with any other student. I mean, I spoke with others, parents and some of the students themselves, it's staff. It's staff issues.
Did you ever bring this to the attention of the previous superintendent, the current superintendent, or members of the school board?
I did not. And I should have, because he did have a problem there last year.
Uh-huh.
And I shouldn't have sent him back. I went ahead and sent him back because they supposedly had changed staff. Well, some of the staff members were still left behind. However, I just think it's some of the teachers just don't know how to communicate with some of our students.
I limited the superintendent response.
So, hi, Tina. How are you?
I'm okay. How about yourself?
I'm well. I appreciate you calling in. You touched on a great point, and that is we need to ensure that our adults are addressing our students appropriately in their mm-hmm. language and in their actions. Mm-hmm. So, sounds like with your particular situation, we may need to talk offline a little bit more to see if more needs to be done with this particular situation. But I appreciate you raising the concern. It's my mm-hmm. expectation that our adults that are serving our students are ready to receive them with a warm and friendly environment and mm-hmm. are providing them the best opportunity to succeed in the classroom. And so whenever parents feel like that's not happening, we mm-hmm. want to hear about it, and we want to address it as soon as possible.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Tina, okay. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to hold on. And mm-hmm. Chris, the gentleman that talked to you when you called me, is going to mm-hmm. pick up the phone off the air and give Chris your name and a number where you can be reached during the day.
Okay.
And we are give that information to Superintendent Farabee and his staff, and someone from the staff will get back with you.
Okay, thank you much.
All right, thank you. 239-1310. This, Superintendent, I know there's been some changes in the upper-level structure of IPS. So if we're telling people to follow the chain of command in IPS, starting with you got a problem with the teacher, start with the teacher. Then you go from the teacher to the assistant principal, then from the assistant principal to the principal. From that point, where's the chain of command after the building principal? So I think you may have changed the titles of some functions. So what's the chain of command?
Right. So while we're in the midst of reorganization, we still make sure that there's supervision of our schools, and so we want to make sure that we take out the hierarchy structure, if you will. We have a core leadership team of individuals that support and supervise schools. Mm-hmm. And if they're not able, parents are not able to get their concerns addressed at the school level, mm-hmm. We have core leadership team members that are assigned to each school that can follow up on any concerns.
Is there a particular title for those core leadership, or if they call the main number of IPS, say, I got a problem with the principal, I want to talk to the person over the principal?
So currently, those titles are directors, but we are moving to a structure of academic improvement officers,
okay.
And academic improvement officers will be the individuals that would be the point of contact.
239-1310, 239-1310. So we were talking before the break about the Tech Titans basketball team. They've been on ESPN. They're getting on SportsCenter. The TV stations are all doing their basketball, their Friday night, whatever the heck it is, out at Tech. What has made these young men special? Because in order to play, to do any extracurricular in an IPS school, you have to have a 2.5 academic grade point average. So that means they got to be in class learning something.
Right. So, you know, what's really exciting about the Titans this year and the basketball team is not only what they're able to accomplish on the court, but these are fine young men who I'm very proud of. They're not only doing well on the court, but many of these students are the top in their class as it relates to academic performance. So a lot of people know that Trey Lyles is going to Kentucky, and he's a
Kentucky.
Kentucky. Yeah, he's a McDonald All-American, the second in the history of IPS from our district. But what is more important, he's an honor roll student. He has basically a 4.0 GPA, which is outstanding. He's in the top of his class. He's a fine young man. We got other on the team. Jeremy Tyler's another one. He actually volunteers to coach my son's basketball team. He's got a scholarship. He's performing well in the classroom. And I think these two examples would highlight just the culture that the coach has established on that team.
How important is it if a major school like Kentucky looks at an IPS student athlete, that word gets around to other schools? Hey, maybe we better go back and look and see what diamonds in the rough are at this Indianapolis public school system.
Yeah, I think the national attention is very helpful, but I also think it speaks well to our academic program that not only are we preparing well student athletes, but we have them prepared for college, and they have the SAT and the grade point average and experiences to go off and be very successful out of Kentucky or any other college or university.
239-1310, 239-1310 with Dr. Louis Farabee, superintendent of IPS. Let me go to Anonymous right quick. Hi there.
Yes, I'm calling. I am an on-call bus attendant, and I'm wondering on the days that they are – school system is shut down because the city is shut down by the mayor. Why aren't on-call bus drivers and attendants being paid?
Let me ask you this. If it was a regular day and you weren't called, would you get paid?
Well, that's not how it works. Everybody's on, even the on-calls come in every day.
Okay.
So we don't wait to be called. And we're expected to be here.
So that's a good question. And are the on-call drivers under a collective bargaining agreement under a union contract?
No, that's not. No, we're not.
Okay. So would superintendent on-call drivers, if on the 6th and the 7th, they would have been paid because they were on call waiting for somebody to call in sick, would on those days, would those be part of the employees being compensated?
And again, it would depend on their status with the district. And so it would depend on if they're a full-time employee or they're part-time. But again, our intent in the budget, not the budget resolution, but the resolution that I recommended to the board was one that would allow employees to be paid when school was closed and those days would not be made up.
Anonymous, let me ask you, since you're not covered under a union contract, correct?
Yes.
And are you considered full-time hourly or part-time hourly?
Well, we're not considered part-time. We're just considered on-call.
Okay.
Most of us and a lot of us do make more than 40 hours a week.
Is there a person, have you read in the personnel policy what it says?
It says that we're not, but then that is like not when the mayor shuts down the city.
Right, so she's referring.
It doesn't say that. When they shut down the city and nobody's allowed or no one is supposed to go out, I feel like that, if we're not given the opportunity to be there, I think that we should be paid.
Right, so I see her point. Okay.
So if she's a full-time employee, so she's spot on, she's a full-time employee, even if she's on call, and let's say we don't have school, and school is canceled, and those days aren't made up, again, which was January 6th or 7th, it's the board intent and my intent through the resolution that we passed that those individuals would be paid. So in this case, It sounds like she should be paid.
And those were the 2 days that the mayor closed the city, was the 6th and the 7th. The other days, he didn't close the city. The school system made the decision that they would not be open those days.
And those are days. But I would encourage.
But those have the makeup days.
Correct. So you would be paid during that time. But I would encourage you, Anonymous, to work directly with your supervisor to make sure that there's a clear understanding of your status and your pay for those 2 days that would not be made up.
Okay?
I'm sure of my status. I'm just saying that this is the difference, and I've been here many years that I don't remember ever the mayor shutting down the city like this.
Oh, no, no. Were you around in the blizzard of 78?
Yes, but I wasn't working class yet.
Oh, well, trust me.
I came a few years later than that.
All right, then the blizzard of 78, Mayor Hudnut shut down the city with an official... I'm proclaiming the city is shut down.
Okay, well, let me say this.
Mm-hmm.
I came a few years after that, and the mayor may not have shut down the city, but then we weren't all call drivers then. They didn't have IPS didn't have on-call drivers at that time.
Right. I would say what I'm hearing, Superintendent, and I understand where the caller's coming from, but I'm also hearing, Superintendent, that maybe there is some things unclear on the policy and what the decision that you and the board made. So maybe there needs to be, you know, an email or an e-blast or a note to employees, just kind of walk everybody through what the policy is.
So, and some on-call drivers would be temporary employees. So temporary employees would not be in the category to be paid on those days. So it would really depend on your status with the district.
All right.
Okay. I understand, and I'm not aware of any on-call drivers that are not. There are temporary, but then, you know, okay, if that's the difference, I understand.
All right, but you made some good points, and maybe that's something also for you as a taxpayer and as a resident to bring up with members of the school board. That is also your right as a citizen. I appreciate it. Let me go to Jeremy at 239-1310. Hi, Jeremy.
How are you, Mr. Brown?
I'm fine.
How are you, Dr. Farabee?
I'm well, and you?
I'm all right. First off, I just want to say, like, as a citizen, as a taxpayer, I'm rooting for you. I'm liking what I'm hearing so far. And when public school does well, we all benefit from it. But now my question is, you were talking about the Tech Titans basketball team and how all these young men, they have all these scholarships to go to school. And I know, and I'm in college right now, and there's more of an emphasis to put all these students into college, get as many, especially our kids, get as many through college as we can. But we also know college isn't for everybody. So what exactly are your views on also putting an emphasis on skilled trades and technical education? Because in my opinion, we need just as many kids that know how to build a college that we have that know how to graduate a college.
So, Jeremy, great comment. You're spot on as well. You're right. We need to enhance our vocational education and career and technical opportunities. We need to make sure that we have opportunities for our students that are interested in entering a career after graduation. You know, one of the things that I've learned from talking with our students is most of our students, I would say at least 60% of our high school students are already working, supporting their families, and are looking for opportunities to enter the workforce after graduation. What I think a lot of people don't realize at this point is that many of the jobs that would be available to students after high school graduation require the same academic skills that are required for college. So we need to make sure that the students have those academic skills that they need to enter the workforce, because there are jobs available. They're out there, but you have to have certain math skills, certain reading and writing skills in order to enter in those jobs. And we need to make sure that we do a better job, that students are prepared for those positions, but also we create apprenticeships and other vocational and career and technical education opportunities for students to work after graduation.
Let me go to Anonymous, and we also got a special guest in our studio at 239-1310 with Dr. Farabee. Hi, Anonymous.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question. I am and I apologize, Dr. Farabee, for asking again. Maybe it's already been answered, but I'm a part-time employee in an office for IPS, and I understand that we were paid for the 6th and the 7th, but what about day before yesterday? Because I can't get clarification on whether or not we're going to be paid or whether or not we are allowed to use our own time that we've accrued for those days. No one knows the answer, and I've called and left messages for someone to call me back. I'm not really clear on what the status and situation is because it was, you know, for me, it was already bad enough to not get paid for the week and only getting 8 hours because I am a part-time employee. But I want to get clarification if I'm going to get a full paycheck.
You know, Dr. Farabee, I'm going to send you a bill for doing your HR department's job.
And so we have not had a recommendation or approval by our Board of Education on yesterday. And okay. So determination has not been made on how we will handle either makeup time or how this particular day miss will be addressed. And so what I would say to you is as soon as a decision is made, we will make sure that our employees are informed and know how to handle this particular day. But again, it's the intent of the Board of Education and myself to ensure that we take care of our employees when we're in these situations.
And one last thing. Yeah. I just want to say to you, welcome aboard. I think right now you're doing an awesome job. You're looking out for the kids, and I think you're looking out for the employees, too. I just think in this situation, just clarification on right. What direction we're going in. But I just want to say thank you for your dedication so far with IPS.
Thank you. And as we make these decisions, what I would want the community to know is we are considering what's best for our students as it relates to makeup time and instructional day. And then we think about, again, how we will address pay. But we want to make sure that our community understands that the best interest of our students, ensuring that they get what they need, is paramount.
All right. Appreciate the call. 239-1310, 239-1310. There's going to be a special event next Saturday, which is February the 8th, up at Light of the World Church. The great pastor of that church, Dr. David Hampton, is here because, you know, it takes the church to bring folks together.
Amen.
Usually I do it. But it takes the church to bring all five of the African-American school superintendents in the 11th largest city in the country. So we're talking IPS, Washington Township, Pike Township, Warren Township, and Lawrence Township, all in the same room talking about education. And I know when they all get together, Dr. Farabee is going to say, you know, why weren't you on, Amos, so you could answer all those questions from your employees about pay for the makeup day. Dr. Hampton, what is going to happen next Saturday?
Well, thank you, Amos, and so good to be on the show with Dr. Farabee, and welcome to Indianapolis.
Thank you, sir.
Very excited about your leadership here. Next Saturday, February the 8th, from 9:30 to 11:30, we are hosting at Light of the World. What I call an historic event, because this is the first time in the history of Indianapolis that I know of, and you'll know better than me, Amos, that we've had five black superintendents. It's really an opportunity for parents, and we want community engagement, just to talk about the urgency of education. A few months ago, last year, I also hosted a wonderful event in which Dr. Condoleezza Rice came and talked about education. And she was a national and international figure who talked in general about education. But this is now an opportunity to engage our community. And we want to hear from our leaders. We want to hear directly from them. And, of course, Nate Jones, superintendent of Pike Township, is a member of Light of the World. We got together along with Dr. Jeff Woods and really talked about what can we do to engage parents, because you know, the sense of urgency in our community is one in which we can critique and criticize so-called outside groups for proposing solutions, right? Yeah. Proposing solutions for the black community. I'm less upset about outside groups as I am frustrated with us not forming our own solutions to our own problems in our own communities. We have five talented superintendents here. We want to hear from them. What can parents do to engage their educational process? What can they do to be empowered? How can they be informed? And you won't hear that from any group. You'll hear that directly from these talented leaders. And so I'm just very excited. And I really hope that parents sign up. We have about 250 RSVPs. I don't know how many of them are parents. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that parents come.
That's just one side of your church. 250. That's a little small side. So you still got room.
Well, the problem is we planned for 300. Okay. So we're almost full, but it looks like we're going to have to expand, which is a good thing.
It ain't big in light of the world unless it's standing room, SRO, standing room only.
You're too kind.
Okay. But that is good. So how do people sign up?
You can RSVP to Dr. Jeff Woods at jeff@theexpectationsproject.org. Or you can call 317-427-8686.
And the Expectations Project, we'll talk about that at a later date, but that's an effort to try to get the church more engaged in education.
Right.
And sometimes, Superintendent Farabee, church folks think they can't get engaged in education. They get hung up on what the Supreme Court said about praying at one time of the day, and they don't realize that schools want churches involved.
Our faith-based community will be critical to our success, and particularly for the Black community. You know, that's where education started, with read and response. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we really learned to read, and literacy was an opportunity for African-American families. And so I don't want ever to be considered that that's not a voice that we want to have in our community and in our schools, and that's not a presence that we want to have. That's something that we embrace. That's something that we welcome. And we understand that with our faith-based community, we have a tremendous opportunity to transform student outcomes.
Let me go to Anonymous right quick with the superintendent at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. I am calling because, well, first of all, good afternoon, Amos. Mm-hmm. And good afternoon. Dr. Farabee. I am calling because of we had the inclement weather, and I was concerned about students that had to walk. And I was wondering, is it a possibility that students, if they are, say, within, let's say, 3 blocks, could they just board the buses to get to and from school until we pass the inclement period?
Ooh, that's a deep question. That's one of those deep philosophical questions. Is that something realistic, or the way the transportation scheduled are, and assuming that a bus is 3 blocks away from the school, one would assume that bus is full? I understand what she's saying. That's an interesting.
So I want to make sure I'm understanding the question. Is the suggestion that during this period where we have extreme cold is to reduce the walking distance from the home to the bus stops?
Yes.
Is it from walking from the home to the school?
From the home to the school, because there are students I know they might have to walk 3 or 4 blocks before they get to their bus stop, and then they have to go to wait on a bus. Or there might be students that maybe they live just 4 blocks from the school. 4 blocks is enough to get frostbitten. Why couldn't those students just be put on the bus and taken from their home almost to the school? We're not the only system I know that would be doing that, because some of the townships already do it.
You know, that's interesting. I know I don't have a map of the bus routes, so my eyebrow would be raised if there are students walking 3 or 4 blocks to an IPS bus stop before boarding the bus to school. I do know that there are students who walk. I think the rule is less than a mile or 3/4 of a mile from an IPS school is where you walk, and that may be one of the considerations for a 2-hour delay is also, walking conditions. Is that something that you'd want to hear as you take your listening tour? Because that's an interesting thing. I think a lot of this is because this may be the most number of 2-hour delays and school closings that IPS has had in a long time.
Right. So it is something that we want to have as a part of our listening tour. So again, reminding all of our families to come out, give us ideas like this. We want to hear from you. And we also encourage you to participate in our stakeholder survey. But more specifically, to address the question raised, we do have a emergency route plan where if there is extreme cold in many of our residential areas, there will be numbers that families can call where the buses will come closer to the homes to pick up students when it's when there's extreme cold. As it relates to students walking to school from their home, you know, I think that's a great idea for us to consider and explore what are the possibilities of having stations close to the school where students could be picked up, maybe satellite stops, so students don't have to walk as far when there's extreme cold. But what I would say with any, you know, transportation challenge and when we have extreme cold, if families would call our transportation office, again, that number is 317-226-4500, 317-226-4500. If you would call and give us notice about difficulties walking or getting to school, we will make sure that our students are picked up and get to school safely.
The other thing is that you are trying to out-Twitter me on Twitter. I mean, yeah, Doc, you, I think you are the, on the Twitter thing, you are the only superintendent around here. You're on Twitter. You're on Twitter more than the doggone governor. And you're definitely on Twitter more than the mayor. And you're almost on Twitter more than I am at Farabee IPS. That's your Twitter handle. But I noticed the, and IPS is IPS schools on Twitter. But I noticed the other day, Dr. Hampton, I've never heard of this before. IPS buses are on Twitter. It's called IPS buses. And I'm looking here at what they say on Twitter. It said within the last hour. So, like for example, bus 216, school 114, delay 10 to 20 minutes. So if you're the parent and you know that your kid is on bus 216 and you were on Twitter and you were following IPS buses, you know that you got a whole. And I am noticing you got a whole lot of delayed buses here today. So I don't know what I don't know what the deal is.
It's not Dr. Fairby's fault though.
But this is part of communicating with the district and with the community. You put these buses on Front Street.
Yeah, we're being very transparent about the work that we're doing. You know we. Get most of our students to and from school safely every day on time. But there are times that we have delays, and we want to make sure that parents have an opportunity to be aware and can plan accordingly. You know, one of the things that I believe in, we have to capitalize on the technology we have. Mm-hmm. And so that's why you see my presence in social media and as a way to communicate. And what I would share with families, too, everybody has a smartphone, right?
Or the $25 phone that you get from Walmart.
Right. So you can do Twitter on your smartphones. You can actually do our stakeholder survey on your smartphone.
Is it something to teach the kids how to teach mama and grandma and grandpa and daddy how to do that on the phone? Because some parents have the smartphone, and the only thing they know how to do on the smartphone is answer the phone.
Right. Well, we're relying on our students because what I found is most of our students have a smartphone.
And they know what.
And they know how to use it.
Maybe that's an assignment. You know, show us how you told your parents how to get IPS bus on Twitter.
Right. So we want them to take advantage of it and sign in. We're asking that, you know, families and students follow me, follow transportation and IPS schools.
And there are a number of meetings where you can tell the superintendent and give him feedback on where you think IPS is going. The first meeting is tomorrow afternoon from 1 to 2:25 at CAFE. That's the Community Alliance of the Far East Side, 38th and Post Road. Then on Saturday, yes, he's working on Saturday, he'll be at the Julia Carson Government Center from 2 to 3:25. That's at Fall Creek in Delaware. Y'all know where the Julia Carson Center is. On Tuesday, he's going to be down at the Southeast Multi-Service Center, the Senior Citizen Center at 901 Shelby Street from 6 to 7:25. Next Wednesday at the University of Indianapolis, Schweitzer Hall, from 1 to 2:25. On Thursday, over at Easter Seals Crossroads, 47th and Keystone, 4740 Kingsway Drive, from 7 to 8:25. And then on next Friday, the 7th, from 2 to 3:25 at New Wineskin Ministries on the west end of church, Pastor.
Amen.
And February the 8th, you know February, where I'll be.
And February the 8th, he's going to be at Light of the World with all the other superintendents of color. See, that's going to shake everybody up. Everybody going to wonder, what you doing?
We hope so.
Anyway, and if you want more information on that with IPS, you can go to ips.k12.in.us. They tried to, this new lady on the staff gave me the look. Is the new website address working? Because I still have the old one.
It might be a caching
It's coming soon. IPS Kids? What's it called?
MyIPS.org.
Well, let me see if that works. Because I tried that. I tried that a couple weeks ago. MyIPS.org. Okay, wait a minute. MyIPS.org. Wait a minute. They may have a new. I got to put the www?
Yes.
Oh, no. It says. We'll talk out. Yeah. We'll on that, Dr. Farabee.
www.myips.org.
Dr. Louis Farabee, superintendent of IPS, thanks very much for being with us.